Welcome to the Faith Church Peshtigo podcast. You can connect with us online at faithpeshtigo.com. We're also on Facebook. Just search for Faith Church Peshtigo. Today's podcast features a conversation between Pastor Jay and Pastor Robbie talking about the sermon from October 18th, 2020.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jay, and joining me is Robbie.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Yes, this is episode number politics.
Is that a number?
I don't know. It is today.
Okay.
I've lost count, and then we just said, oh, this was the big sermon on politics. But before we get to that, Robbie, there's something that I have to address.
Oh, good. Jay, what do you need to address?
I've been holding this back for a little bit, but we had a verifiable, legitimate David Goliath moment this week. So if people don't realize, here's the thing. Here's what drives me crazy about Robbie Helene. So Robert Otis Helene is good at everything. He is good at everything. He's the guy that says, oh, I've maybe picked up a drumstick before, and then all of a sudden he's like, doo, 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 doo. Not like that. See, I can't even drum with my voice as well as you can drum with sticks. He's the guy that says, I dabble on the keyboard, and then it's like, and he's that guy. And so he just does all the things well. And I'm sure people listening right now, Robbie, have somebody in their life like that. And how it just, it just drives you crazy. And I always felt like...
You're saying I drive you crazy, Jay?
Just because of this. Because you're good at everything. And I'm not, decidedly not. You know, and so you're the true Renaissance man. And, you know, like if anybody wants to talk to you about electrical wiring, you can do that. About art or philosophy. And then it turns out, if people don't know, this is evidently such an issue for me that the one thing I always had over Robbie was sports, because I was an athlete. Well, we could call it that. I tried athletic endeavors, and I was interested in athletic things.
Which I didn't even do that.
Really. Right. You didn't even do that. And so Robbie would have been the kid in the PE class in the basketball unit who still's got his you know, dress socks pulled up and, you know, wearing the Chuck Taylor's probably, you know, and not dressed at all for athletic endeavors. Am I right? Am I far off on that, Robbie?
I wasn't wearing dress socks, but I wasn't
like colored
wasn't
socks.
Really
like
I
gray,
was,
like,
I was you know. Doodling a picture on the back of my right. hand or something.
Right. Yeah. You were not attacking PE with an intensity.
No.
So all this like got to a place where we actually had a conversation one day where I said, where I was expressing all this and said, well, at least I have sports. And then like it was that night or maybe the next night where I literally had a dream. I had a dream that conversation was continuing. And then I happened that in my dream, I had the conversation that I had in real life. And then while I was sitting at home watching ESPN, they replayed a game from back in the 90s. This is in my dream. And in my dream, it was like Kentucky winning the national championship on a shot by Robbie Helene. And I just watched, I was watching and going, what? He's never even mentioned that. And so I was super angry. So that's, it's so, like, it's inside of me. And so.
I'm haunting you in your dreams.
You're haunting me in my dreams. And so that has continued that. My son wanted to put together a fantasy football league. Do you know where I'm going with this, Robbie?
As soon as you said David and Goliath, I knew where you were going with
this. So my son puts together a fantasy football league. We try to fill it. He wants to know if Robbie wants to be in it. Like, Robbie's the music and art guy. Like, he probably, oh, yeah, no, sure, I'll give it a whirl. He goes in there, drafts what I'm like, oh, Robbie, that's not a good move. And lo and behold, your team, which is called the Mob of Angry Monkeys.
That's correct.
Was not only undefeated, but destroying everyone, wreaking havoc. It was literally a mob of angry monkeys wreaking havoc through our league, making children in the league cry. And then And then we were paired up this week. We were matched up this week.
We were.
And ladies and gentlemen, the people won a victory this week. My team.
Are the monkeys the oppressive regime?
The oppressive regime, good at everything. I won a victory for all of the less talented people in the world. If you have ever been overshadowed by someone who says, oh, what's this thing? And then does it better than you have ever dreamed of doing it. You're the guy that picks up a fishing pole and just hauls in a huge fish, a huge
great
catch.
White shark.
Yeah. And you're like, is this good? That's the part that really irritates me. Is you're like, oh, like this? Grabs a golf club. What's this? Which end do I hold? Okay, boom. Drives it 300 yards straight down the fairway. Was that good? Did I do it right? Did I do the thing right? You're that guy. And I beat you this week.
You did.
I beat you,
you did,
Robbie.
Narrowly, too. It was touch and go for a little bit there.
But I wasn't supposed to. The projections, of course, Even the computer was saying, obviously, Robbie Helene is going to win. They didn't even know about your stats or the players. They just knew the name on the other. Like, oh, yeah, that guy. And I beat you.
You did. Fair and square.
Would you imply that I would cheat?
Yes. It grieved me possibly more than most that this was the weekend that Green Bay decided to come off the rails, because I was counting on both Aaron Jones and Davante Adams to deliver on my behalf. You know, for me, really. They're doing it for me.
They really are.
But they let me down. So I'm gonna have to have words with them later. But yes, their decimation this weekend led to my decimation at your hands. But honestly, I felt good that it was you, Jay. If I had to lose to somebody, I'm glad it was you, because you haven't been having the best season so far.
What? I'm in second place. why would you? Well, okay. That is very unlike you.
I don't ever get to trash talk, because I don't ever have a good reason to. But
oh, see, that's the opposite of what I'm saying. You always do, but you just don't. I received scores of texts thanking me
for dethroning.
Yeah, from all over the country, Robbie, like California, Nevada, Texas, any place where you have where your jack of all trades, well, actually master of all trades, has hit. People thanked me for standing up and taking you down.
Well, it had to happen eventually.
It did. Okay.
I'm glad it was at your hands. Good game.
It was, wasn't it? It truly, truly was. A victory for the ages, for all the little people. All right. We should move on to important things.
That's a good idea.
I mean, that was pretty important. All right. So this sermon this week, I got some feedback from.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I thought it was fairly innocuous.
Hmm. Did you? There's two in a row. Huh. Hmm. All right. I don't feel like that's
I don't always feel like I'm a good judge of
truth.
Those things.
Okay. No, so you got some feedback. That's good.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the deal. I have said before that I don't like to bring politics into the pulpit, and I won't. And I still hold to that, but it's important that we define what we mean by those things. So I will never endorse a candidate or tell people how they should vote on different things. But more and more, because of the condition of our country and because of how divisive politics have become, I feel an incredible responsibility that we need to speak into that. We need to help Christians think about how should I approach these things? How should I think about politics and these issues? Because otherwise, we're just leaving them to the voices that are out there in the world, which we would never do that on any other topic, right?
That's right. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Well, we have been guilty in past days. There have been, it feels like every generation, every culture, every kind of era of the church has these issues that we seem scared to talk about. We seem scared to deal with.
That's a good point.
And I think this is ours in this era. And when I look back on past eras and I think, what do I wish pastors would have said? during the civil rights movement or during, you know, during the Civil War or, you know, during World War II, during when we understood that the Holocaust was going on or any of these other things, I've wondered, well, what do I wish they would have said? And then I put myself in that situation and say, okay, this is the thing that's going on today. So we have to make sure that we aren't silent in these areas that are clearly divisive in our country.
I think that's really important to remember because we can't trust the news media to help us understand how Christ would want us to consider these things. We can't trust the internet, though I'm pretty sure I heard once that everything that you read on there is true. I don't think that's accurate. But so if you're not hearing how to see these things through the lens of Christ in the church, where would we expect our people to hear that?
Right. And what I didn't want to, it's so tempting then in these situations to just be reactionary and to feed off of and just try to refute some of the things that are out there. And I thought, you know, for this podcast, I thought it might be helpful for our people and for the six people who are listening, that how do we, like, what are some proactive things that we can, proactive handles maybe we can get? Because I got a lot of feedback. Like I said, I got feedback on this message, but most of the feedback was either encouraging, which was encouraging to me, or not discouraging, but just like asking for more help. So I get that this is all kind of jumbled and kind of we've deconstructed maybe some of the political ideology and the platforms and the idea that there's a Christian party and a non-Christian party. Like maybe we've deconstructed that and helped you deconstruct that, but then how do you build that back up?
Right.
So I thought it would be good for us to just touch on three handles that, you know, maybe can be tangible enough and helpful as you kind of navigate politics, not just this election, but just as we move forward and try to come through this and try to see not only our church unified, but also our country and to help our country heal and have unity. Hmm. So the first thing, and Robbie, I'm hoping that you can address this. So it's a question that I would be posing to you. But one of the issues that I see is that, and I touched on this in the sermon, where I said that we need to let Jesus determine our talking points. Yeah. And it was just kind of a quick point, but really that's a big deal to me, that I see often the American church being like a puppet for a party. And we're not supposed to be that. We aren't to look to our political leaders to tell us what are the things that we should most care about. And one of the ways that I see this happening is that they will present secondary issues as of extreme importance. And I think we need to learn to prioritize. We need, like, there are a lot of things that we can care about and a lot of things that matter. But I guess the question I would ask you, Robbie, is does it matter what order we put those things in?
I mean, I think Jesus would argue, yes, absolutely it does. And I might even push your statement a little bit farther to say it's not being communicated to us that something is of extreme importance. There's some issues that are being communicated that they are of ultimate importance. Mm-hmm. They're the most important thing and should be what dictates our decision. And we need to be able to take a step back and say, does this actually align with what Jesus has said are the most important things? Because what we see throughout the Gospels over and over again is a group of people who believe wholeheartedly and have committed their lives to following God. And what Jesus is most of the time gently, sometimes a little firmly, trying to help them understand is you're not following God. You're following your own rules, your own traditions. And that's something that we need to be cautious of, that we wouldn't find ourselves actually grieving Jesus while we believe that we are serving him. And as you were talking, I thought that was such an important point. I love the concise way that you said that, of our talking points should come from Jesus. Because Jesus and the New Testament clearly determine our talking points and what should be ultimate to us. What I thought of as you were saying that is Jesus' woe to the Pharisees. in Matthew chapter 23, and he goes down this list of, you think you're doing this, but this is what you're actually doing. You think you're doing this, but this is what you're actually doing. And one of them that sticks out is in verse 23 of chapter 23, he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites," which means you're presenting yourself as something that you are not. "For you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others." And then he goes on and says, "You blind guides, straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel." So clearly Jesus believes that it's important to have these things in the correct order, and lays out, like, not, hey, at least you're doing this thing that's important. He basically communicates, because this is all you're doing, it all grieves me. So start with the things that I have declared are most important, and also do these other things. So he doesn't say, like, don't do this thing that you care about isn't important. He's saying, if you are focused on that at the expense of what I believe is important, which is seeking justice, seeking mercy, acting those things out, walking faithfully in what he has commanded us to, then those other things fall into place, and those other things find their eternal significance in the fact that they're within the context of those greater things. And to your point, our talking points are not nebulous, they're not unclear. They're laid out in the New Testament, either from Jesus himself or from his apostles. And I would argue it's what Jesus says is the most important commandment: loving God with everything you have and everything that you are, and loving others, loving your neighbor as yourself. And the idea of living for the sake of others is ubiquitous throughout the New Testament. It's inescapable. Essentially, every book of the New Testament has some sort of statement about how we don't live for ourselves, but we live for the sake of others, because that's what Jesus says is the greatest commandment, that we love God and then we love others at the very least as much as we love ourselves, right? And then doubles down on that and says, your neighbor, also love your enemies, just like God loved us as his enemies. Let justice and mercy roll down like a river. And I would argue that applies both to the unborn as well as the born, right? It's a whole life kind of application to that. And we see warnings in both the Old and New Testament where God says, don't even bring me your prayers and your songs and the things that you believe are acts of worship if you are unwilling to actively pursue mercy and justice, the things that are most important to me. And then finally, the very practical application of that we see that's not unfamiliar to most of us in James chapter 1, of caring for orphans and widows. And the two things I want to point out in that are, it's not caring about orphans and widows, right, in theory, it's caring for them. I mean, James even goes so far as to say, it's religion that's pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction. So to go to meet them where they are and care for them, meet their needs actively, not just theoretically say, I care about what happens to them, but actually care for them and meet their needs. And the other aspect that I want to point out is, yes, that does mean both literally orphans and widows, but also it's a general term that I would argue encompasses anyone who has no voice, anyone who is unable to care for themselves, which in this culture, like, would be summed up as orphans and widows, who were people who at that time had no voice and were unable to care for themselves.
Right. So where this practically kind of plays out is when I see people, for example, elevate fiscal responsibility of the government above what happens to children who are rejected at the border.
Right.
And the argument then is, well, God cares that we are financially responsible. Yes. But he cares more that we care about the orphan.
Right. It's fairly explicit in Scripture which one of those issues he would define as the gnat and which one of those, right, he would define as the camel. We should strain both of those. But it is a net loss and ultimately grieves the heart of Christ if we celebrate our handling of the gnat while ignoring the camel.
Yeah, and I think also in that is, and I love that you pointed that out, to visit them in their afflictions, that it is a, it is in front of you. It is the good Samaritan. It is loving that neighbor that's right in front of you and meeting them where they are right now.
Exactly.
So therefore, when people say, kind of go, I've heard the roundabout thing, like, well, but fiscal responsibility will mean a stronger economy, which will then result in, you know, better jobs for people and fewer orphans. And so therefore, I'm loving the orphan. Well, yes, that is a way to do that. And why it actually would be, it's important for us to have fiscal responsibility. But again, that is less important than the immediate care for that child right now. So
unequivocally.
Yeah. And so that's, I'm glad, I think you summed that up really well. I think, so that's the big first point that I would want people to consider is, don't be fooled by political parties who will try to create their own, their priorities, and try to convince you that those should be yours. You can care about something. You can say, yes, I agree that that is something that government should care about, but I care more about this. So another example would be if someone in, say, locally in the government, let's imagine that we had an issue where children were starving, and someone ran on a platform of repairing roads. Repairing roads is important, and you can make all the arguments you want. Well, with smooth roads, that means less maintenance on your vehicle, and that means you'll be able to get to work faster, and you'll be able to do all these different things. But we would all look at that, I think, and say, hopefully in the church, we would say, yeah, but we have children starving to death right now. So we should deal with that. And then we can do these other things. And I just keep seeing that situation over and over again of people kind of buying into and getting swayed by these lesser issues. And they are lesser issues. And Jesus clearly stated, you know, even when it came to the law, when he talks about the Sabbath, you know, there was the man with the withered hand who is asking to be healed. And the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they could accuse him. And Jesus brings the guy up and he says, I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to destroy it? And after looking around at them all, he said to them, stretch out your hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored. And it says that the Pharisees were filled with fury.
Right.
They were,
it's shocking,
angry that Jesus healed this man's hand. That is an example of missing the point. If their argument was just, well, is the Sabbath important? In a theoretical conversation, Jesus never devalued the Sabbath. He actually is valuing it more, saying this is a holy day, and so I'm going to do good on this day.
Yeah. Which I think is important to bring up, that in saying this thing is secondary, that is not to say it is unimportant.
Right.
It, as Jesus said in the woe, I wish that you would have done this without neglecting the others. It's not to say that that thing is bad. Do that as well. But if my focus is on the lesser thing at the expense of the greater, that's not a win.
Yeah. All right. So that's one big thing.
That's good. What's point number two? Point number one, just to reiterate, yeah. Point number one, prioritization and taking our talking points from Jesus. So what's number two?
So point number two that I thought would be helpful is kind of, it's coming off of that as we determine what these issues are. It's acknowledging that something is an issue doesn't mean agreeing with everybody's solution to that issue.
Hmm.
So
that's good.
We have this issue, like, so here's a simple example that it should be very important to us as Christians that we care for the poor. And that, again, going to the vulnerable, the most vulnerable of our society, we should care for the poor. But how that plays out could take a lot of different paths. You could increase unemployment benefits. You could increase welfare programs. You could subsidize homeless shelters. You could give tax credits to families that make under a certain amount. You could put money into food banks. You could, I mean, there's so many different things that you could do. And you could agree or disagree on that. But what I see happening right now is people are linking solutions to issues so much so that they can't be separated to consider what the actual issue is. So one example I gave, and I'm not going to rehash this too much, but in the sermon I talked about being pro-life. And yes, I think abortion is evil. I think that it is a cultural sin and a travesty that I do believe that someday down the road we will look back on this era and wonder that people 200 years from now will look back and wonder how could this culture and this society have put up with this. I do believe that. I'm vehemently opposed to it. But that doesn't mean I have to buy into the solution of, say, the federal government or the overturning of Roe v. Wade. So they don't have to link, because this is one of the things we've talked about, Robbie, a lot, that I think a lot of people don't understand that overturning of Roe v. Wade doesn't make abortion illegal.
Correct.
All it does is just follow this logic. It just turns the decision-making back to the states. It gives it back to the states, essentially. Correct. I'm oversimplifying it, but that's basically what it does. And when you realize most abortions happen in states that are very pro-choice in their electorate, you realize it's not going to change very much at all.
It would arguably, in fact, become more available, and the current restrictions would potentially be minimized, because the fact that there's some federal control over that is actually keeping some states from going as far as they would prefer to with those laws.
Right. So what many experts who are on both sides of the issue have said is, you know, what's likely to happen is now the woman in Kentucky is just going to drive to Illinois, and Illinois, to be more welcoming for that, is going to maybe make their laws on that even more lax, so that it's easier for that woman from Kentucky to get there and take care of that. And I my apologies to both people from Kentucky and Illinois if that offends you in any way, but I'm just using it as an example here in the Midwest, that those are the kinds of things that can happen. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not for overturning Roe v. Wade. It doesn't mean that I want to keep it at all. That's not the issue. The point is, just like we prioritize issues, we also need to consider how we go about solving these things. So that's one thing, is saying like, okay, well, I want to care for those people right now. I want to care for those the unborn right now that are in front of me, that are in my community, that are in my county. And I don't have to buy into a political platform's view of like, well, this is how we need to solve this.
Which I think speaks to your sermon point on Sunday about that historically, morality has never been successfully dealt with from the top down.
Right.
Passing new laws does not ever transform hearts. It does not ever address the source issue that's actually creating that cultural problem. Oftentimes it makes it worse. For example, prohibition, which did a bang-up job of lowering alcoholism, right? I mean...
Sarcasm.
Yes, that was ironic.
Ironic, sorry.
Right there, it did not actually do that, just in case you weren't a history buff. But understanding that it is, I want to see an end of these things so badly that I want to do the things that will actually work to see the end of that thing. And and simply passing a law or repealing a law, those sort of things do not transform hearts. We need to do the things that Jesus taught us and modeled us do transform hearts, so that this thing evaporates regardless of what the law says.
Right. It's not as if there were zero abortions and then Roe v. Wade happened and all of a sudden people said, oh, this is an option, we should do this. There's other issues, there's cultural sin issues that get us to that point. And I think what's important too is that it has to be said that the reverse is true. So just because I don't agree on how, for example, in this situation, how the Republican Party is trying to combat abortion or protect the unborn, that doesn't mean I then dismiss that issue. It doesn't mean I then say, well, abortion isn't a big deal then, because I don't agree with that, you know, that this is how we have to go about it. It's still an issue. And I see this happening. So this is a subpoint of this, where people will disagree with how people are going about trying to solve an issue. And so therefore they dismiss the issue in and of itself. And a very clear example of that that's happening right now, which grieves me in the American church, is the view towards what's of racial injustice, of systemic racism, and in our country. And what I see are a lot of people rejecting the notion that there is racial injustice going on, and they reject it on the grounds of not liking the protests that are going on.
Right.
And I just need to say that is nonsense. If imagine that in our office, Christoph, who works on our ministry team here, imagine that every day I came in and I bullied him. It's very subtly, nobody sees it. Just I walk by him and I kind of, you know, push him up against the wall. I take his lunch and maybe throw it in the garbage, or maybe I eat it if it looks good to me. I say demeaning things, and I just knock him down every day, every chance I get, just constantly demeaning him, constantly pushing his buttons, constantly just making his life miserable. And then imagine that one day he snaps and he shoves me up against the wall with his CrossFit muscles and just screams at me. And everybody else looks at that. Now, Robbie, I ask you, in that situation, is the conclusion you reach at that point, well, that was inappropriate of Christoph to do that, therefore I conclude that Jay has never done anything wrong?
That would be irrational.
Obviously, the first question you're going to ask is, what happened?
Right. What on earth provoked that extreme of a response?
Right. And even if you say, yeah, okay, Christoph, you shouldn't have responded like that, that would not let me off the hook. Hopefully there would be a serious investigation then into what was I doing and why was I doing that, and am I doing that in other places, and the effects that clearly had on Christoph. And I just look at this, and I have to say this, that if we're going to oppress a group of people intentionally, legally enforceable oppression over nearly 400 years by first buying and selling them as property, separating them from their families, then and massively abusing them, then quote unquote freeing them only to create laws to oppress them further, and when the law failed to keep them down, protecting murdering terrorists who would lynch somebody on Saturday and then teach Sunday school on Sunday, and the church protected it. And then only in the last generation did we finally stop legally enforcing this kind of oppression, which of course didn't stop it completely. And then at the slightest mention of the generational problems that this has caused, that maybe doing this over 400 years, maybe that would lead to some issues that we have today. Just mentioning that, hey, do you notice that a disproportionate number of men in this group ends up in prison or killed and suffering in poverty for families? Just at the slightest mention of that being met with defensiveness and indignation and deflection and justification, you think there might be some backlash? You think maybe there might be just a little bit of reaction to that, a little bit of frustration that might flow over a little bit? And so when I hear people say, well, I don't agree with riots, therefore I don't think there's a racial injustice problem. Come on. We can't as Christians do that. We have to say, okay, we'll deal with this thing over here later, but we need to, what in the world is gone on that then creates this environment, that creates this kind of culture? that in no way makes sense to look at that and say, oh, well, that dude threw a garbage can through that window. Huh. Well, obviously, slavery and Jim Crow and the KKK had no effect on today. Sorry. I know it's a little... getting a little ranty, but I just, it's, but I want us to, it should matter to us, right? Like, and we should be able to say that, okay, let's have a conversation about this and know that this is a problem and not say, well, because a football player kneeled during the national anthem, therefore I conclude there's no racial injustice. What?
I think that's just difficult for us. Because it's difficult for us on a one-on-one, even internally, even personally, it's difficult for us. So certainly corporately and on a national level, to be able to make that distinction between your unhealthy response to this thing does not mean you don't have a right to be upset about that thing.
Right.
Right. We do that with one another, even within the church and in relationships. We're so quick to say, I don't have to listen to you. I can dismiss you because you didn't handle that in the way that right. was best or that I would prefer. And so if I'm doing that in my own sanctification, right, if you come and you challenge me about something, you say, Robbie, the way that you handled that, you know, with Christoph throwing your lunch away, you came across as a real jerk. And I go, well, I think it's wrong to call people jerks. So I refuse to listen to your correction of the unchristlike way that I responded in that situation. Like that's, if I struggle with that on a personal level with relationships that are close to me, it's certainly going to be easy for me to do that on a national level when I'm very detached from the vast majority of the suffering and the effects of all of this, right? So that's why we need to be on guard, both on a national level and on an individual level of saying, We have to listen. Again, coming back to the first point, like, what is this? How does this align with what Jesus has said, what the New Testament teaches us about what it means to be an image bearer of God and what it means to be an ambassador for Christ in and a part of his kingdom in this creation? And are we working for or against the anti-creation elements that are in culture around us? Are we standing out as a light of the welcoming mercy of our God as demonstrated through Jesus, or am I defaulting to that defensive position and just like everybody else's? And ultimately I end up doing the same thing, right? I'm excusing my disobedience to Jesus, right. my unhealthy response to that, my unbiblical response to that, I also end up dismissing.
Right. And that really goes, thank you for bringing the calm voice into that so people can hear that. That goes to the last thing that I think is important is just to say the way we go about all of this matters. And it matters Amen. Even more than most of the things that we're even, it matters as much or more sometimes than the things we're pursuing. So that's where you go to these priorities of things. It matters how we go about these things, because with the character and nature of Christ. And so when we say that we think something's not an issue and we are dismissive of people's pain, that is not something that is of Christ.
No.
And so that dismissiveness there and defensiveness and indignation, we never see that in Christ. And if anybody ever in the history of the world could have been dismissive or indignant, it would be Jesus, who knows how all of these things actually fit together and knows how small some of these things actually are. If anybody was going to be dismissive, it's him, but he's not ever. So I think, I mean, what do you... Do you have helpful things, Robbie? Because I feel like right now I gotta
you got yourself all worked up.
I got myself all worked up into a dander, to a tizzy. but I just have such hope for the church.
Yeah.
I know that every era the church has had the opportunity to be light and salt in the midst of darkness. And it's every era. In some eras, the church has responded marvelously. In some eras, it has been horrible. Oh. It's just the way that it is. And I just want this era, like I believe, I know what God can do through us. I just want us to pursue those things and in the way that, of Jesus. So, I mean, what pops into your mind, Robbie, like what are the characteristics? What should be the defining traits in how we go about any of these things?
Man, the first thing that popped into my head is we must be a people who are known for what we are for rather than what we are against. Mm-hmm. And our tendency is to always make sure everybody knows what we are against and what we disagree with, which does nothing but further alienate people, make the gospel seem offensive in the wrong ways, right? Offensive because I am offensive, not offensive because you don't like the idea of submission or God, you know, all the ways that we justify, you know, well, if they're offended, it's because of the gospel. No, they might be offended because I am a jerk and I'm doing it in such a Christless way that I am marring the image of the Jesus that I am trying to hold out in front of them. So rather than being a people who make people feel like God is utterly inaccessible to them, we are supposed to be ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal to the world through us. And what is his appeal? That he loves the sinner, that he came not for the righteous, but for the sinner. He came not for the healthy, but for the sick, that the cross is only for people who don't deserve it. It is only for the evil and those who are currently enslaved to Satan. And if that becomes not only what we say, but what we demonstrate with a welcoming love, with a listening ear, a willingness to say, I don't understand your pain. I don't understand the things that are making you so angry right now, but I want, and I won't ever probably fully understand, but I'm willing to stand with you. I'm willing to stand beside you and listen to you and speak God's transformative mercy and justice and faithfulness and love into this situation. That is the only way that we are going to be the culture transforming influence that we are supposed to be. When what we bring is all that God is for and all that we are in favor of, rather than constantly being the voice screaming about what we are against.
I what that makes me think, Robbie, is what Jesus declares over and over and over again to a lost and hurting and broken world is he is for us.
Yes. Come to me, he says.
Yeah. You say like be known for what we're for. Jesus consistently is demonstrating he is for us. How? Why? That is a mystery.
Right. And for them.
Right. And for them. Like, right. Yeah. It's not our camp, like just that he's for sinners. Just think about how crazy that is. And so when this question of the Sabbath comes up, he's saying this man with the withered hand, this is who I'm for. This is more important that Sabbath. And you know, he says also that man, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. That there's that prioritization again. That's the understanding of how these things fit together. But you know, I've pointed this out before, but the woman caught in adultery is just such a clear example of that. He declares who he is for. He's for that woman. He protects her. More important than clarifying his views on adultery, or with the woman at the well, more important than clarifying his views on divorce and remarriage, or in the situation of the man, you know, who needed to be healed, or anybody on the Sabbath, more important, it's always the person that's in front of him. It that's who he cares for and he prioritizes. Mm-hmm. And we see that through Scripture. Like yeah. When you talk about, like, don't tell someone to just go and be well fed and be warm. Actually give them bread. Like actually meet their needs and be with them there. And so imagine if the church was able to say to people of all different views in any kind of situation you can imagine, and I love how you said that, maybe I don't understand why you're upset or why you're angry or what the pain is, but I'm for you. Imagine what that would do to just be able to declare that for somebody, like whatever's going on here, I'm for you. Because our God is for you. And I want to be able to say that. And we deal with these other issues, but if you ever have an issue versus a person, Jesus never hesitates as to which one is elevated. And I know, even as I'm saying that, I know that people could take that down, like, well, then, you know, well, what about this situation? Does that mean you never speak truth? That's you know, if you want to take it there, you can, and you're going to anyway. It doesn't really matter what I say, but we don't lead with issues. We lead with people. Does that make sense?
I think that's so important. And we could keep going on this for quite some time, I imagine, because what immediately popped in my head is the disciples asking about the blind man,
right,
and making it an issue, right?
Right.
Is he blind because of his sin, or is he blind because of his parents' sin, Jesus? It's a theological discussion for right. them, and Jesus' response is, he's right here in front of us, like, how about instead I heal him of his blindness? Instead of trying to figure out, well, is it his fault? Is it their fault? Whose fault is it really? Jesus' response is, God did this for his glory. Whose fault is it? It's God's, because he knew that he could turn these ashes into beauty, right, and he could glorify himself through somebody actually seeing this person and caring for them and meeting their needs.
You know, and it plays out in the rest of the New Testament. We addressed this a couple weeks ago about Paul talking about meat. There's another time where issue was, can we eat meat or not? And Paul's answer is, love your brother.
Yeah.
Like it is for that person. And so it is vital that we get that. And so if we approach all these things, so a good guiding principle is, if you have an issue that makes you dismiss people, then that's not of Christ.
It is not of Christ. It is unequivocally not of Christ.
And does that mean that everyone will agree with how we love people or what we think is best for them or most helpful? No, that's not the point. Those are secondary things, though. The first thing is to love the person that's in front of you and to be for them as Christ is for them and to declare his glory and his goodness. So we've
Amen
gone on
that.
Enough. That's probably enough. And so if you have other questions about that, we want to be helpful. And if you can always contact us and ask further questions. And if we think that it's, we could continue this conversation next week. If we think there's a lot of feedback about something, or we think it would be helpful for everyone, or we can just deal with it, you know, one-on-one with specific issues. But again, just remembering that we want to prioritize the things that Jesus prioritizes. We want to not get bamboozled by a culture that will try to link all solutions with issues. Like we need to be able to look at issues for what they are and care about those, and not get fooled into dismissing them. And then we need to go about all these things in the way of Christ, which first and foremost means looking at people and caring for the person in front of you, loving your neighbor as yourself.
Amen to that.
So thank you for hanging in there with us on this podcast. We are appreciative of you listening. Hopefully it's been helpful, and we will talk to you next time.